Chaver, welcome to conference call number 10 with Rabbi Mordechai Willig Shlita. We thank Rabbi for being available to us. Without further ado, let's begin.
I apologize for my being late. Question number one. In an environment where security camera recordings are increasingly used to prosecute crimes and therefore as a crime deterrent, is there any way we can have a setup of camera recordings at shul even on Shabbos? With a general recording of the street entrance to at least record who came onto premises so that if something happens, we can know who came in better than a video recording at the front door. Is a loop recording that erases itself after a week, for example, better than a full recording? Here's the answer. If there's no screen and the recording is only a digital recording, I believe there's no prohibition whatsoever, and that's what should be installed. And this way, if someone comes in and does something wrong, a crime, a burglary, whatever, there is a recording which can later on be taken from the digital format and put into a visible format. But while it's in a digital format, then nothing's happening. It's just something in abstraction. It's in cyberspace. It's not a real picture. And as such, I believe it creates no problem in halacha whatsoever. On the other hand, if there is a screen, then it's a big dispute. Some consider a screen to be nothing more than a mirror. You're allowed to walk in front of a mirror on Shabbos, even though your picture is seen on the mirror. Some view a screen as a mirror. I would say that most disagree and consider it to be worse than a mirror and involve some kind of a prohibition. Most authorities assume it's a rabbinical prohibition. There's no Iser D'Oraisa over here. The nature of the prohibition could be, perhaps it's considered like a co-save because you're causing something to be written on a screen or a picture on a screen. Soveya, things of this nature, but probably only Midrabbana. Presumably because it's not Shel Kayama, doesn't last for too long. These things are automatically erased after a while. And the part that's on the screen, on some kind of a tape, is very, very temporary. So we assume it's Eina Shel Kayama Klal. Nonetheless, it's a rabbinical prohibition. Even if it lasts longer on the tape, it's not really a kosev on a level of Daraisa. And therefore, we assume it's a Darabonim. Again, some say it's Heter Gomer. Some can suggest it's maybe even a Daraisa. We assume the middle position. It's also a Darabonim if it's on the screen. Now we have a question that's called a Psik Resha Lo Nichole, because the person's intention is not to be photographed. The person just wants to walk into shul. And it's Lo Nichole that his picture be on the screen. He wants a Ganav's picture to be on the screen. But the Ganav's not asking any shaylos. So since he doesn't want his picture to be on the screen, so it's Psik Resha Lo Nichole by the Rabbonim. Now that itself is a tremendous dispute. Rabbi Avadya Zatzal was very forceful that Psik Resha Lo Nichole by the Rabbonim is mutter, based on the Tosfos of Masechta Shabbos, of Kuf Gimel and Aleph. And I believe that is a very valid psak. And even the Mishnah Berurah in many places can be interpreted in that way, although there are those places where it's difficult to interpret him in that fashion. So therefore, I believe that ideally there should be a setup where it's only in cyberspace, only digital. However, if it's impossible for whatever reason, and there's no alternative but to have a screen, as long as it's not a permanent a picture, which it usually isn't, it would be a Psik Resha Lo Nichole by the Rabbonim and would be permissible, again, if it's necessary for security on Shabbos. Of course, ideally, we shouldn't get involved in these kind of situations, but sometimes the security concerns are so great. If it's for whatever reason, it's impossible to have a digital only. I think it usually is possible, but if it's impossible, there's room to be somewhat lenient. Now, part two of the question is arranging the Shabbos project originating by the Chief Rabbi of South Africa, where it's supposed to only include sites that will promote a halachic Shabbos according to the Jewish code of law. If a Jewish center has a security camera recording, can we overlook that issue and still include it in the program? The answer is absolutely yes, because these recordings, as I said before, are either permissible in certain instances or permissible b'shasatchak. In other instances, can certainly be included. Question two relates to the second part of question one. In trying to spearhead the Shabbos Project locally, we are looking for guidance how to allow inclusion of conservative/reform congregations. Lay leadership seems to feel their endorsement is crucial. Can our VAD, our firm organizations, create a web page that includes listings of these congregations under the banner that we are all agreeing to keep a halachic Shabbos? If they agree to keep a halachic Shabbos, would there be any restriction with working with Chovevei congregation on this project? It's a very difficult question, and I'm very hesitant to say anything because this is, as I understand it, an international project, which obviously goes beyond the particular communities of the various rabbanim that are involved in this call. And I hesitate to say anything because I don't want to get involved in a dispute with other internationally known rabbis that may be saying something different than I would say. I'll only say one thing, that in South Africa, from the little that I read, there are no non-Orthodox congregations. It was either the Orthodox congregation spearheaded by the chief rabbi of South Africa and the unaffiliated, who had no particular affiliation. It was a smash success. And many, many of the unaffiliateds keeping one Shabbos halachically. Of course, part of the success was precisely that, that people were looking for something, they had nothing. And when the Orthodox chief rabbi proposed an Orthodox Shabbos, there was something to latch on to. Contrast this to the United States of America, where there are these conservative and reform movements that are very numerous in terms of their affiliated members. And these organizations have been preaching for years that their version of Shabbos is acceptable, driving cars and all kinds of things. And what now? Why all of a sudden should we keep an Orthodox Shabbos? Well, what's in it? Rabbi, if Orthodox Shabbos is Shabbos, what are we doing every week by driving to our conservative synagogue? It's a tricky situation on many levels. I think the trickier part is for the non-Orthodox, how they're going to handle this. But from the Orthodox perspective, I think it depends on so many different factors that we cannot list, we cannot predict. Every rabbi in his own community has different standards of cooperation or the lack thereof with respect to the non-Orthodox rabbis and their congregations. It seems to me that those rabbis who have spent an entire career staying away from non-Orthodox rabbis and congregations because they want to make it clear that the Orthodox is different from non-Orthodox, they don't want to throw away a whole career's achievements in one Shabbos. Oh, Rabbi, now it's okay to work with the conservative and reform and on religious matters. I'm not discussing, as my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik would say, what they call klape chutz, in matters concerning the State of Israel and what was then called the Russian Jewry movement, or the problems of they want to ban shechita. That's a different story completely. These are what we call, in my Rebbe's language, klape pnim. This is a question of Shemir Shabbos, how Shabbos is to be kept. And according to the guidelines that I understood from my Rebbe's presentations, and both in oral presentation and writing, and they're printed in a number of places, this would not fit in to the guidelines that would be in which would be permissible to work in a cooperative fashion with non-Orthodox synagogues and clergy. And therefore, it's possible that even though there might be an uptick in Shemir Shabbos for that particular week, one has to consider the possibility of what we call Yotzei Schar BeHafsedo. Not so simple. One may argue that an international project is different somehow. That's maybe one would argue that way. And since, if I understand correctly, if this project is not going to happen for quite a number of months, I would say that if a particular Orthodox rabbi is confronted with the situation, I think the proper thing is to temporize and say, you know, this is a serious matter. Can't say definitely yes because we haven't done this before. Again, those who were doing it before, they have no shilas. But those who have not been doing it before have a difficult question. I think we should adopt a wait-and-see attitude, see what some of the major internationally known rabbonim are saying. But even if they will give a green light and allow it, certainly within the purview of any particular rabbi in his community, that he says, no, I want nothing to do with the other congregations, so I can't be part of this project because it involves too much of too high a level of cooperation between the various rabbis and their respective congregations. Again, how would we present it, and what exactly would be the level of cooperation is unknown to me at this time, so therefore I can't give a definitive answer. I'm just trying to give a few guidelines which will have to, for those who need answers to questions, will have to try to adapt these guidelines to the facts on the ground as they become more clear. Question number three. Yeshua and Pesach and Shavuos, my shul has many yahrzeit boards in the sanctuary, and they add a lot of heat and expense if they're on for 2 days of Yom Tov. Also, some express a concern having them lit up on the seventh day of Pesach is wrong, since it is not Yizkor. Should that concern be taken seriously? Can a non-Jewish caretaker be instructed to turn on the yahrzeit boards on the evening of Achad Shel Pesach, or second evening of Shavuos, if Simchas Torah? I think the Simchas Torah is wrong. I mean, it's really Shmini Atzeres, so let's leave that out. If these yahrzeit boards are would be connected to a Shabbos clock, would there be any issue setting the clocks to go on the evening of Achad Shel Pesach or Yizkor morning? How about to go off Achad Shel Pesach in the afternoon? So let me start at the end of the question, which is the good part. There's no problem. And that's what should happen. There are very sophisticated Shabbos clocks these days. You can have it go on for the smallest amount of time that people consider it to be important. That probably is in most shuls to be on just for the davening of the morning of those days. From the time they start to the time they finish, it's a few hours. And even though the same time exists the morning before, in other words, Shvi Shel Pesach, or the first day of Shavuos, but there are now new kinds of Shabbos clocks that can, you know, overcome that problem, have it only go on a day later, and not 8 o'clock in the morning on the previous day. Worst case, if it goes on for 3-4 hours twice, it's not terrible. There's nothing wrong with it going on the seventh day of Pesach or the first day of Shavuos. The truth is, this whole idea of Yizkor having the yahrzeit lights go on has really no source whatsoever. It's made based on a custom that some had to light a yahrzeit candle on days when Yizkor said, which itself has no real source. So I don't see any reason to rely on having a non-Jew put it on because it's there's no real source for this. It's not a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's not a mitzvah d'rabbanan. If in a particular situation the person has no alternative but to rely on a non-Jew, there's room to be somewhat lenient on the grounds of shvus to shvus, because on Yom Tov, it's not on Shabbos. Now, Achron Shel Pesach and Sheni Shel Shavuos could both come out on Shabbos, but as long as it's not on Shabbos, so it's a derabbanan, Easter of Molad Eish, whatever, so there's no derais of Mavir on Yom Tov, if it's for any use, and this is, I guess, so important for some people, some kind of a use, we assume, so it's a derabbanan. But again, even if it's derabbanan, it usually requires some kind of a mitzvah. Maybe if it doesn't qualify as a mitzvah, it qualifies as a tzora gadol, because in people's minds it's such an important thing, even if it's not really so important. So then is what to be spoken about. But again, as I said before, the proper way is to have it put on a Shabbos clock, and I hope that everyone will be able to, who needs this, will be able to procure a Shabbos. And while I'm on the topic, we're talking here about yahrzeit boards, which fly 3-4 times a year. Unfortunately, there are many shuls, strictly Orthodox, that have a non-Jew putting the lights on and off every single Shabbos. That's a much more serious problem. That's a shal of telling a goy to do, presumably a d'oraisa, if it's an incandescent bulb. Even if it's for a Torah mitzvah, the general psak is, although the balayit is matah, we don't rely upon that. And again, there's no need for it anymore. They're sophisticated Shabbos clocks. And I'll tell you another secret. If you leave the lights on all Shabbos, it's not going to break the bank either. But especially if it's fluorescent light. So this should be reviewed as an issue beyond the days of Yizkor. Question number four. This is the hardest question. The correct Torah approach of a person growing up in my shul discloses to me that he is a homosexual. What if he still lives at home and his parents share with me this information seeking my help? What if he's asking for guidance? To whom should he be referred? What if the parents' siblings are asking for guidance? To whom do I refer? There are many painful questions I have. These here are a few. Is there a difference between he's out to the public or just shares it with his rabbi and family? Does he have nemonis if he tells me that he has not acted on his feelings, only thought about them? If he wants to join the shul membership, can he be accepted? Even as a non-member, can he participate in the minyan, aliyah, duchen, if he's a kohen, etc.? All difficult questions. So the most important thing to understand, which is not clear in the question itself, someone is seeking my help. What exactly is he looking for? Asking for guidance. What? Help for what? And guidance for what? If the person just wants some spiritual help and spiritual guidance, so then, of course, a rabbi has an opportunity to help and to guide, if that's what he's looking for. If he wants psychological help and guidance, he has to be referred to an expert psychologist. If he wants to try to change his orientation, which is a very controversial issue, as you probably all know, there are, in many parts of the country, psychologists who will undertake such an attempt. In some parts of the country, you can't find it. It's not politically correct. It's not professionally correct. There are even very vindictive individuals who seek to remove the license of individuals who are attempting this kind of therapy. I have been told by people in the field that they have been successful, again, for patients who want to change. The very word patients is part of the issue, because those who claim it's not an illness, it's just a different lifestyle. Well, clearly, it's not a lifestyle which the Torah accepts. And therefore, if an individual is taking that brave step and at least attempting to change his orientation, which should be encouraged, but it should be done properly. It shouldn't be done in a manner which compromises the individual's health. There are rumors of suicide if it's not done properly. Again, it's a difficult change to be made. So to be very careful in approaching this. And the same applies to the parents or to the siblings if they're looking for spiritual help and guidance. The rabbi plays a role. If looking for psychological, then the psychologist plays the key role. Now, the issue of an individual who is out, that's a problem. Now, if an individual reveals to his rabbi, to his close family, his orientation, that is completely acceptable because he's looking for help, or at least he's trying to explain to people why he's acting the way he's acting. There's nothing wrong with that, because it's totally appropriate, but it's kept under wraps. Individuals may have the suspicions, etc., but that doesn't matter. It's kept quiet. The problem with what we call today coming out is that it often, although not always, often coming out has some of the elements of what's called today on the street gay pride. And that's something which we cannot accept under any circumstances, that we cannot endorse, we cannot accept. If a person has a different orientation which leads him to want to do things which the Torah prohibits, we have to be compassionate. But if someone is proud of doing things which the Torah prohibits, we cannot be part of that, whether it be homosexuality, whether it be adultery, whatever it happens to be. We're not permitted to give our endorsement to individuals who are proud of behavior which is prohibited by the Torah. So therefore, to go back to the question, if he speaks only to the rabbi or to the family, I believe he has nemonis, the word that was used in the question, that he has not sinned. And in that circumstance, I think he can belong to a shul, he can participate in a minyan, he can get an aliyah, he can duchen. To the contrary, such an individual who has been beset with such an orientation and is able to overcome desire to engage in sinful behavior and to remain celibate is someone who we should look up to and say, wow, he's able to overcome a Yetzirah that most of us can't even dream about. So we have to, look up to that ability to conquer this Yetzirah that unfortunately he is suffering with. and we have to give him full rights and membership, etc., etc. Again, I'm talking about a person who has explained the situation to his rabbi, to his family. There's no pride, there's no coming out. It's just something which we have to deal with, and I believe that's the way to deal with it, because even though he has these issues, we have to be careful. Now, on the other hand, if he's involved in clearly sinful behavior, then it's a whole different story. There's a lot of discretion that the rabbi has to exercise. We spoke about it in the first two conference calls way back, about the possibility of giving an aliyah to someone who engages in sinful behavior. You wouldn't want to give him the aliyah which actually talks about that particular sin. That's found in Shulchan Aruch and the Mefarshim. On the other hand, we spoke about it then, that there are some rabbis who feel that some sins are in a particular time and place, are breaking down the very fabric of a Jewish family and must be fought on all battlefronts. And they feel that this is an exception to the rule and should not be a person who's actually violating these laws should be not be allowed to be a member, not be given aliyah, not be able to duchen. This is a difficult call for a rabbi to make. As I said then, it depends at least in part on the attitude of the people in the community towards this particular situation. Some shuls, everyone's very, very liberal, and perhaps the rabbi feels he has no choice but to give an individual certain honors, even though he's engaged in sinful behavior, and there's a precedent for it, as we mentioned. On the other hand, in other communities, or the rabbi feels strongly in his community, no matter what the people think, there's a desire to draw clear and unequivocal lines at certain kinds of behavior which were considered unacceptable in the entire world 35 years ago. The world has made 180 in a fairly short span of time. We still go back to the attitudes of more than 35 years ago, when this is considered to be something which is unacceptable, and we're not willing to change our position. So we have to take a hard stand, even if we have to express compassion on a private level to individuals, especially those who are not involved in sinful behavior, even if they have come out, which I think is unwise, but if they're not actively engaged. Again, the question of nemanus shifts a bit if the person is out as opposed to if he's not. But if it can be assumed that he's not acting on it, then we have to be much more compassionate. If he is, then it becomes very, very difficult, because if we were to accept him as a full-fledged member with all the privileges and rights, then we're basically saying that in our shul, whatever your family situation is, it doesn't really matter much. And we don't like to give that message. We are a very family-oriented religion, and Torah is family-oriented, and relationships based upon these sinful acts are not something which we can endorse or encourage. So that, again, those who want to go back to the tapes of the first two shiur, we spoke about this at some length, and I'm going to leave it at this point. Question number 5. What are the limitations of participation for an aval during the 12 months in community events? Community shalosh shudas, weekly kiddush following davening, weekly kiddush following davening, that this week happens to be in honor of a bar mitzvah or a bris, community sit-down Friday night meal. Good questions. Shalosh shudas in shul is generally viewed as a shalosh shudas at home. A person has a home where he lives with his family. He has a shul where he lives with his fellow mispalelim. So he eats all the meals of the week, he eats in his house, and one meal of the week in many shuls. Some shuls have it all year, some shuls have it half a year. In my shul, we only have it between Sukkot and Pesach. But then, the person's not going to go home, so he eats with the people in the shul. What about a yeshiva boy? He goes to a dorm yeshiva, and he's in Avelis. So he can't eat in the dining room. The dining room is his dining room. So he has a dining room in his house where he lives, and a dining room in his yeshiva where he spends most of his year. So we're not going to say that's a violation of Hilvos Avelis. The same thing would apply, I believe, to a Shalosh Shudas, which takes place every week. It's like one family. There's a family which is very large. He can eat with his whole family. So in the shul, it's a little bit larger. Maybe yeshiva, also sometimes larger. I believe that would be permissible in that circumstance. On the other hand, a weekly kiddush following davening is not exactly the same. It's not a suda. It's not one of the three sudas of Shabbos. It's a separate event. The fact that it happens every single Shabbos is a fascinating sociological phenomenon. I guess maybe if it's a hashkama minyan and they have to have a shir afterwards and they have to eat a little bit so they can have the strength to focus better on the shir, that would be permissible. But beyond that, if it's the shul's over at very far from hashkama, it's over after 11, and then it becomes really a purely social event. It's not a meal. A totally social event. When it comes to these kinds of social events, generally the rule is that an Orvel should not partake of the food. However, since it's not a Sheva Brachos or something of that nature, it's permissible for him to enter into the room if he feels he has to circulate and socialize a little bit with his fellow Mespalim. I think it would be permissible, but he's better off eating at home. You know, the Magen Avraham anyway says you shouldn't be eating Kiddush as a rule because you should have more of an appetite when you go home and have the Hamotzi. So if he doesn't have the ability to do that all the time, maybe during that particular year, he'll establish a good habit and not partake. It's not necessary. It's just a weekly Kiddush and shul after davening is over at 11-something in the morning. Let him go home and eat it with his family. That's what I would recommend. Now, of that particular week, it's a bris or a bar mitzvah. So if it's a bris, it's the same, I believe, as we just said until now. A bris is an event, maybe even more chomer, because it's a formal event, and even though he's allowed to come for the actual bris, he's allowed to walk around, but I think he should eat at home. Bar mitzvah is different. Bar mitzvah, if you look in Yerodeus, and Sadi Gimel, the Gideon Marashah, and other Mepharshim on the side, they seem to say that bar mitzvah has a den of a siyum, because the bar mitzvah presumably is a siyum of the father's obligation of limaratam osman spenechem, which according to the Rambam in the first halacha in the Chostam Torah seems to terminate when the child is no longer a katan. So it's a sudas Torah. Sudas Torah, the poskim say, is permissible for an avel. Example is a siyum. Example is the suda which used to happen in Simchas Torah in various shuls where the Mishnah Berurah is lenient. So there is, I believe, a bar mitzvah has a special status, Suda's Torah, and one may participate even during the 12 months of Avelis. Now, community sit-down Friday night meal, I think it depends. If it's just a convenience, for example, we're just not long past Shabbos HaGadol, past Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So Shabbos HaGadol, many shuls had community meals for a simple reason. The women wanted to make the house Pesach before, they didn't want to cook for Shabbos. That's again, that's your dining room, we just moved over from your house to the shul for the convenience of your wife. That's, I believe, no problem with that. However, it's like Shalosh Shiddush we said before. However, if there's some kind of a special event that they're sitting down to, then it's like an event. It's a separate event. It's better that the individual not partake of that meal. And if he wants to hear a speaker or some of that, so let him eat at home and come to hear the speaker. That's what I think is the answer to question number 5 in all its 4 parts. Question number 6, also avelus. In the case where a person died in America and the body is being buried in Israel, A, should an oval accompany the mace act as an owner on the plane? The answer is yes. Even though he's not doing anything on the plane, since it's a fairly short ride, it's a 10-hour trip from America to Israel, it was a little bit longer. So they had it in the old days with the wagons. So even though there's nothing he can do right now, it's still considered to be in the state of an onen, and he should therefore not have meat or wine. He should make sure he orders a non-meat kosher meal, and he should not daven, he should not make brachas, with all the status of onen. B, what should the status of Avelim staying in America after the mace is on the plane? That's a very good question. The question is obviously a Talmud Chacham, who asks perhaps nowadays when they may be involved in the funeral in Israel, either by watching it, listening to it, or informing people in Israel about it, make them own them until the burial actually takes place? That's an excellent question. Let's get some background. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Moed Katan that people accompany the mace up to a certain point, and then they turn their backs and they go back to the house. So that's when the avelus begins. So it's always been traditionally accepted that if a person goes to the airport and again turns his back as the mace is wheeled into the cargo section and they close the doors, he takes off his shoes and he starts the avelus right then and there. And that's always been accepted as the appropriate implementation of the case in the Gemara. Now, new technology requires that we rethink that. Even though he has turned his back and gone to his home, and the mace is going all the way to Israel, but he may decide to Skype it, or at least cell phone it, right? Things of this nature. Or maybe he's going to even be busy calling people to tell them about it. So he's misasik with Tzorchei HaMace. So I believe that the first two, namely the Skyping or the hearing on a cell phone, that's not really misasik with Tzorchei HaMace. I don't think it reaches that level. He's just he wants to see. He wants to feel that he's part of it. He wants to see it. I don't think that's considered to be an undoing of Mahapech Ponavan HaMace. You'll say, what do you mean? He sees the mace on the screen many hours later. It seems to me that's a little too remote, and the Avela should still begin as soon as he leaves the airport or turns his back on the mace in the cargo section. The third case is a little bit more complex, because if you're still informing people in Israel, you're still actually Osek B'Tzorchei HaMace to increase the Kavanah HaMace, that might be a bit more problematic. I think that because of that reason, he's much better off doing, whenever possible, doing all that before he turns his back on the mace, make the phone calls then, send out the emails when these days then, so that this child shouldn't come up. If, in fact, he's still involved, it's a good question. I'm not exactly sure what the answer is. They depend on a number of other considerations as to whether the Aninus would continue or the Avelus would begin. Those considerations are a little bit too complex to speak about in the brief period of time that we have. So again, to avoid that question, I would say it's strongly preferred that such an individual should make all of his phone calls and his emails or whatever he's doing to inform people in Eretz Yisrael about the upcoming Levaya and Kvura. Tries his best to do it before he's Mahapech Ponav HaMace in the airport. And I would go further than that and say that in case he's unable to, he has a certain call, he forgot to call this one, or he wasn't able to call that one at the wrong time of the day or night, that it should be delegated. Someone else make the call. That's not as strong as Askus, just writing a list of phone numbers to someone who's going to then call on behalf of the family. That's much less of an involvement, and we should at least do that in that circumstance. Again, we have another available question. When someone is niftar on Erev Shabbos or on Shabbos and Levaya is scheduled for Sunday or Monday, what is the status of the mourners, onanim / avelim, ? What can they do or not do on Shabbos? Say Kaddish, sit in a different seat, eat out. On Motzei Shabbos, should they make Havdalah? All right, so once again, the last part is the easiest. The answer is no. You don't make Havdalah in such a circumstance. That's mefurish in all the poskim, Shulchan Aruch, because on Motzei Shabbos, the individual is in the status of aninus. By contrast, on Shabbos itself, there is no aninus. Misha Mason Mutal Lefanos was also with Tzorchei HaMace. Doesn't apply to Shabbos. There's nothing to do on Shabbos. Well, we're not allowed to do Tzorchei HaMace on Shabbos. It's considered a bizoyin for the nifter that they're doing things on Shabbos, even to goyim, to hasten the kvura. Sometimes they're doing things to goyim not to hasten the kvura, but just to relieve the members of the family of the discomfiture of having the mace in the house. That, according to many poskim, may be done on Shabbos, but that's really not Tzorchei HaMace. It's more Tzorchei HaChai. So that would not create any status of aninus. There is no aninus on Shabbos. And therefore on Shabbos a person does daven and does make kiddush and does say brachas and does bench, etc. In my view, not only is it permissible to do it on Shabbos proper, but I think it's probably even worth it to do it the last few minutes before Shabbos. Most shuls daven mincha just a few minutes before the sun sets, when it's really too late to do anything with Tzorchei Ameis, so therefore I think it would be permissible even to daven mincha in such a circumstance. However, not Ma'ariv after Shabbos. Ma'ariv after Shabbos is already at a time when things can be done. Some poskim say that perhaps Kriya Shema should be said at a time when it's not yet the time to start doing things, because if you look in many shul calendars, they'll say, for example, that Shabbos is out an hour after Lichbench, about 42 minutes or so after the sun sets. And before that, people wouldn't do any malacha. So for Kriya Shema, we don't require such a stringent standard. Let's say 35 minutes, just to make pick a good number, after the sun sets is considered to be Tetzik HaChavim and Hilchas Kriya Shema. So at that five-minute window, the person should likely say Kriya Shema. That's what I did. I had such a situation for myself and my father, the Father Rocha. That's what I did. I guess what should be done, but that's only as far as Kriya Shema, the Shabbat Doraisa. I don't think it should be done for Tfilas Ma'ariv. Now, even though this individual has no aninus in terms of outward manifestations, we have a minig that we do keep laws of aninus, of avelus, whenever possible, even before the kavuras against the Rambam. That's how there are more paskins, that a person shouldn't do certain things that we would ordinarily be allowed to do. He's not allowed to do it even before the kavura. They talk about shaving and showering and things which don't apply on Shabbos proper. But there are other things which are applied, which was called Dvar Shabbatina, Tashbish Shamita, and some say even Talmud Torah, are things which are Avelus Batzina, and I believe that they should be observed on this particular day, which is the day of Aninus, since we follow the Ramah, and we observe the laws of Avelus during Aninus. The fact that it's Shabbos is no exception. There are those who are making with respect to Talmud Torah, especially since it's Shabbos, when they're supposed to be learning Torah. Some say you can't just do Mavis Sedri, you can do other things. Okay, that's a matter of dispute. Whoever wants to rely on the Mekilim and learn more Torah is allowed. But of course, ideally, you should learn the Chosavelis, which is what they even were it not for Shabbos. That's the preferred method. What about the question of saying Kaddish? The Machlokes Shach and the Taz is Kaddish said before the Kvura. Most people follow the Shach and do not say Kaddish before the Kvura. That's what I'd recommend. There may be an exception we spoke about before, someone who turns his back. If you're in the airport situation, very often the person who's not going says Kaddish, because from his perspective, it's like the beginning of the Avelus. It's the equivalent of the Kvura. But the case where the Aninus is going to resume after Shabbos is over, it's better not to say Kaddish with the Shach, but those who follow the Taz and say Kaddish is also a legitimate custom. As far as eating out, well, it depends. Very often the family was overwhelmed with the last days of the Niftar, and there's going to be no food in the house. So someone invites them to eat out on Shabbos to just take the burden off them. They shouldn't have to run after someone dies in the family to try to scurry for some meals. They want to help them out by inviting them next door. That is permissible, because that is that's not a pleasurable experience as such. It may be pleasurable, but it's intended primarily to be a logistical assistance to the bereaved family. But if you're just going out to socialize, to have a good time, that's inappropriate under such a circumstance. As far as changing a seat, so the question assumes that we change our seats on Shabbos as well as during the week, which I believe is the majority view. The Shach gives two reasons why it's not available to Farhesi, either because people often change their seats or because it is what we call a low-grade Hilchos Avelus that applies for 12 months. On a simple level, since we do keep Avelus even in before the Kvura, so this could likely be part of that. And therefore, I would say that ideally the seat should be changed. But again, those who don't change on Shabbos b'chlal, or certainly won't change Shabbos this week, there's what to rely upon. Final question, 8. What guidelines should I establish in my community, Eruv, regarding children using it to play ball on Shabbos? This move will not make me look too popular, or the best way to introduce these guidelines so that the children should learn to respect and love Shabbos and not feel that Shabbos is a day of constraints. A very serious shaila. Very, very serious. Over Yom Tov, I was a particular shul. I was approached by a particular rabbi in that neighborhood who was very concerned that there are organized sports taking place on Shabbos in his community. These big baseball fields that come with the uniform, with the gloves, with the hats, what we'll call the Big Day Kahuna. They come to play a league-like game on Shabbos in an organized fashion. Now, the whole reason they established the kosher little leagues, which exist in many places on Sundays, is precisely to counter the Yetzer Hara. You don't have to be involved on Shabbos, just to do it on Sunday. Of course, people want more, but I think it's not an appropriate way to spend the Shabbos. I think it risks what the Talmud Yerushalmi spoke about, Tur Shima, which was Chorev, because they played ball on Shabbos, presumably because it was done in an organized fashion. Now, a couple of kids pick up a ball and they play catch or a basketball and aim a few baskets at the hoop. That's a whole different story. That's just kids playing around. It's not an organized activity, which is premeditated and which is organized and which has all the various clothes that are associated with league games. So there too, of course, it's not ideal, but we can treat it more kindly. We should also make a very big distinction between boys over bar mitzvah or under bar mitzvah. If they're under bar mitzvah, we can be much more lenient. If they're over bar mitzvah, it's really not so appropriate to involve themselves in these kinds of activities. Again, as he was shown with that Tur Shimon was chorev because they were playing bullets, it's a little scary. There was a whole fight about this among the various rabbis. It was something called the Orthodox Roundtable, which is an initiative of, who knows, 15 years ago or so. No, I think it's more than that, maybe 25 years ago. And I think that initiative was scotched when a tremendous battle blew up between two of the main rabbinic participants over this very issue. One said, look, it says in the Tosfos that he used to play ball on Yom Tov. And the other one said, no, it's a terrible thing. Then it was a churban of a whole large city. The Yerushalmi says, one can make a somewhat of a compromise that if they're playing ball in organized fashion with all their various accoutrements, that is something which we should very, very strongly discourage. In my own community in Riverdale, I saw some boys walking with their baseball uniforms. I wasn't for my shul. I called the local rabbi. I said, this is not right. We shouldn't. We have a Sunday Little League. That's what they have the opportunity to play. You have to play every single day with that uniform. It was very wrong. If they're just a couple of kids playing ball in a pickup fashion, I mean, that's much more lenient. But once again, if they're under bar mitzvah, we can be much more lenient. If they're over bar mitzvah, we should try to redirect them. Now, yes, just to end, you want our children to respect and love Shabbos and not feel that Shabbos is a day of constraints. Absolutely. That's a very, very important goal. We try very, very hard to reach that goal. Now, of course, here, the most important player are the parents. If the parents themselves use Shabbos as a day of constraints, I can't do this, that, or the other thing, it rubs off on the children. If the parents use Shabbos as a day of menucha v'simcha ol ha'yehudim, they love the Shabbos, they love the Shabbos meal, the Shabbos mirrors, the Shabbos foods, the Shabbos spirit, the Shabbos Torah. Oh, that's the way to establish Shabbos as a wonderful day that people can't wait for Shabbos. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitcher would describe poetically, lyrically, how people couldn't wait for Shabbos. And they put on, they changed from their rags to their Shabbos garments. And they hated to let Shabbos go. They kept the Shabbos Shudders going as long as they could, hold on to the Shabbos. Unfortunately, today people are late on Friday and running out early on Motzei Shabbos. It's not that same feeling. Maybe because there's too much money, too many activities that people are doing on weekdays, which they view Shabbos as constraining them. But that's a very serious educational goal that we have. It's primarily the parents, if the rabbi can't do it by himself, but, you know, he can have an impact on the community by explaining how much he enjoys Shabbos and inviting the children to come to his house to learn or to interact in a positive spiritual way. Once again, I want to apologize for being somewhat late with this shiur, and I want to thank those who participated in the shiur as well.
Thank you very much, Rebbe. We hope we can count on you in 2 weeks again to answer the shiloh for us,
Amen.
Please.
Amen.
Zai gesund, everyone. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.